This week at the Massachusetts Conference for Women, 11,000 people gathered for the keynote address given by Sarah Blakely. She's the founder and CEO of Spanx, the wildly successful shapewear company that revolutionized intimate apparel. Blakely is the sole owner of Spanx, and at 45, she is America's youngest female billionaire. Her story is now legendary. It begins back in the late 1990s when she was a 20-something door-to-door saleswoman who wanted something comfortable and form-fitting to wear under her white slacks. So she chopped off the feet from a pair of control-top pantyhose, and the Spanx idea was born. All Blakely had at the time was a mere $5,000 in savings, but she had incredible, inexhaustible creativity, drive, and a superhero's immunity to rejection. Her first big break came in 2000, when a buyer for retail giant Neiman Marcus agreed to meet with her in Dallas. When we spoke with Sarah Blakely, she told us Neiman's had only given her 10 minutes for that pivotal first meeting, and from the start, she knew it wasn't going well.
Halfway through my pitch, I could tell I was completely losing her. I mean, she was just not, I could tell she was losing interest. She was so perfectly dressed, like her pen matched her dress that matched her shoes. And I had a Ziploc bag from my kitchen with my prototype of Spanx in it, Ziploc bag. I had my lucky red backpack with me, which was my presentation bag from college, which my friends begged me not to bring. They're like, you cannot go to the Neiman's headquarters
with the red backpack.
With the red backpack, but it was lucky, so I brought it anyway. And so I just said, you know what, excuse me, will you please come down the hall with me and come into the bathroom with me? And she just kind of shifted in her chair and went, okay. And I said, I'm just going to show you my product on me, like what it can do. And I went in the stall and I had them on under my cream pants and came out and showed her. And then I went back in the stall, took them off, came out in the cream pants without them. And she went, oh, wow, I get it. And this is brilliant.
And she decided to buy them right there, right?
She bought them right there. She said, Sarah, I'm going to try you in 7 doors and see how it goes. And I mean, I was out of my mind. It was the first place I'd cold called.
Yeah.
I didn't know anybody there. You know, I lived in Atlanta. I started with the Neiman's buyer locally down the street. And that's when they laughed and said, you need to call our buying office in Dallas. I was like, oh, okay. I didn't know you had a buying office.
But then I love it because your drive, I mean, it wasn't just that one moment, right? There was like a series of things even after that happened. Like I read that you wanted Neiman to see that Spanx could sell, right?
Yes.
So you kind of created your own little market at the beginning.
You have to. As soon as I got into Neiman's, I jumped into action to absolutely ensure success. I mean, no matter what I needed to do. So I did 2 things. One is I called every friend in those 7 cities or friends of friends that literally I hadn't talked to in forever and said, will you please go into Neiman's and buy Spanx and I'll write you a check. And so I was paying all of my friends and friends of friends to do this. And at the same time, then I went into Neiman's and stood in the department store from 8:30 until 7 every day around the country in those 7 stores. My biggest challenge was going to be, I mean, it was amazing that I got into Neiman Marcus, but my product was put in the sleepiest corner of the store where it was in the hosiery department. And this product was for women that you may never go into the hosiery department. So I recognized that. So I would set up a display table and stand in the entrance of Neiman's or by the shoe department and literally show people my product on me all day.
Without telling anyone at Neiman's, you would just do this?
Well, yes, because then everyone thinks someone else approved it. I mean, it's so important to just ask for forgiveness and not permission when you're starting out. You know, I just kept saying, I'm going to ask for forgiveness as long as I'm not harming anyone or breaking any serious laws. Like, I just need to do this because you always know the answer is going to be no.
I love every minute of this. I mean, I have to ask you, I'm talking to you now, years after your company is wildly successful, you're a billionaire. I think Forbes said that you're the youngest female billionaire in America. So obviously, you're successful and confident. Did you feel this kind of the confidence that you're projecting now? Did you feel that when you were in the earliest days of Spanx, when you were doing all these things and hoping to have to ask for forgiveness later?
It's such a great question. I mean, I think courage is a muscle and you have to keep pushing yourself and putting yourself out there in order for it to get stronger and stronger. But I'm scared and nervous all the time. The nerves don't go away and the feeling of stepping out of my comfort zone, But people talk about how Spanx started, but I had started doing work on myself long before I cut the feet out of my pantyhose. And I was around the age 16 when some really kind of big things happened to me all at once. And I started listening to Wayne Dyer, mm-hmm. How to Be a No Limit Person. Huh. And I started really taking to manifesting things into my life, the law of attraction, visualizing things, and really trying to free myself up from what other people think of me.
Yeah.
And as a woman, it really was important. I had to realize that not caring what other people think about me didn't have to mean I don't care about them.
Tell me more about
that. And that was a big pivot for me. Well, if you consume yourself with what other people think of you, you're going to hold yourself back in almost everything you do in life. And I just think we got one shot. It's not a dress rehearsal. Here we are. I don't want to hold myself back because I'm afraid someone might judge me or someone might look at me funny or I might embarrass myself.
This is so great to hear because obviously every entrepreneur takes risks, right? I mean, just by virtue of being an entrepreneur, you're taking risks. But I feel like the risks are even greater for women because oftentimes, we've talked to a lot of them on our show where they say, you know, it's easy to hear that voice in your head saying no. It's easy to hear that voice in your head like anticipating the rejection. And that's why I love the foundation story of Spanx because it seems like you did the opposite of that. Like you might have heard that voice, but you just ignored it.
Well, that leads me to talk about two things. One is when I first thought of the idea for Spanx, I didn't tell any friends or family for 1 year. So I kept it completely private to myself and worked on it at night and on the weekends because I was still selling fax machines door to door when I thought of the idea. And I did that for one main reason is because out of love and concern, people will bring up things you should worry about,
right.
You know, and they're coming from the best place ever. But by telling people your idea or what it is, your dream or what you're wanting to do, you're just for validation, you're opening yourself up. And I didn't want to invite ego into the process so early on. So instead of having to defend my idea and explain it to a bunch of well-meaning people, I just quietly spent the time pursuing it. And I intuitively waited until the exact moment in my journey where I knew I wouldn't turn back no matter what I heard. And it was a year. And so a year into it, all my friends and family just knew Sarah's working on some crazy idea. She won't tell us what it is. But I was telling patent lawyers and I was, you know, telling manufacturers, anybody that could help me move it forward. I just wasn't telling people just to hear if they thought it was a good idea or not.
Yeah.
And ideas are the most vulnerable in their infancy. The minute you have them, and it's human nature in the minute we have them to turn to our coworker, our friend, our husband, our wife, and tell them what the idea is. And when I finally did share the idea, I heard, well, honey, if it's such a good idea, how come no one else has done it?
Uh-huh.
And then I heard, you know, well, honey, even if it is a good idea, you're going to spend your $5,000 set aside in savings and the big guys will just knock you off in 6 months and, you know, put you out of business. And I think if I had heard those things right when I cut the feet out of my pantyhose to wear my white pants to the party, I'd probably still be selling fax machines.
Oh, jeez.
Or something else, because I don't even think fax machines exist anymore. But, you know, another thing is I was cold calling selling fax machines door to door for 7 years. And I heard nothing but no all day, every day. So it was just laying the groundwork and giving me really good training. But I definitely had my days where I'd get in the car and cry. I'd just drive around the block, cry. I mean, people would escort me out of their building and security guards would ask me to leave for soliciting. And I would get business cards ripped up in my face like once a week. But I found that cold calling, I have so much respect
Wow.
for anyone who's ever done that.
So there's all sorts of challenges that an entrepreneur and a young company faces when they're getting off the ground. And then I suppose the challenges change as the company matures and grows. So like in the middle phase when, you know, you had you were in stores, your fan base, can I call them fan base? Your customer base was growing very rapidly. Sales were great. I mean, what were the challenges that you faced at that point in time?
Yeah, I fumbled my way through it. I've never taken a business class. I'd never worked in fashion or retail. I literally just had $5,000 set aside from selling fax machines and an idea and wanted to look better in my clothes and was super frustrated that the people that were making all of our undergarments were men, and nothing against men, but they weren't spending all day in them. So there was no motivation to make them more comfortable, make them fit better, make them work better. And asking so many whys, I was able to unpack that this industry had been on autopilot and was just making things the way they'd been made for 50 years without a lot of change to them. And so that's what Spanx did. It really kind of woke up a sleepy, tired industry. And I'm really proud that, you know, not only that I invented Spanx and it's made such a difference in women and how they dress, but that I raised the bar on comfort.
Hearing you say it, and after obviously so many millions of people affirmed it by being your customers, it's not rocket science. Like, why did comfort like get pushed out of the equation so long ago, right? It just like it took you to ask that question.
Yeah, I mean, the industry had been sizing all of their products on plastic forms.
And not real women.
Right, not real women. So all of mine are sized on real women. I mean, I can remember very vividly when I leaned over and asked them all, ask her how she feels. I found out that they were taking an average waistband size between a small and a large and putting the same waistband on every product.
What?
In order to cut costs during production. So I said, time out. Like, a small gets a small waistband and a large woman gets a large waistband. That's ridiculous. And little thing, I mean, there was a tiny rubber cord in all of our waistbands and all hosiery products that didn't need to be there anymore with the advancement of Lycra. Yeah. The product could stay up, but no one had ever stopped to even say, you know, so I was like, take the rubber cord out. And they're like, well, it's going to slide down. Well, have you tried it? Let's try it. And then sure enough, it stayed up fine.
You are so successful, and have you always been so driven, right? Because I don't think that you would have gotten as far or has done as well as you did if you didn't have an internal drive from the start.
I feel like I have been driven for most of my life. And when I think about where that comes from, I think part of it is DNA. But I think part of it is, I can't explain it, but since I was little, I've had this gratitude for being a woman born in America at the right time and in the right place, and knowing that I had nothing to do with that, that that was just sort of luck, and wanting to do the most I could possibly do with this moment in time and this opportunity, and recognizing how many women came before me that didn't have the opportunity, and how many women still now around the world don't. That's been a big driving force for me.
Wow. So what's next for you?
I mean, oh, Meghna, I have so many things. I'm so excited. I have like a spiral notebook full of ideas. I have like 52 pages of ideas.
For the company or things?
Just in general.
In general.
A lot of them are inside of the company and a lot of them are outside of the company.
Wow.
I know. And I have 4 children under the age of 7. So I don't have that much time, but I really am just, I feel very excited about life, and I love trying to do things that haven't been done before.
So last question then, because
does that make me sound crazy? Maybe
no.
Just made me sound a little crazy. I shouldn't have shared 52 pages.
Even if it did, maybe you have to be a little crazy to get as far as you have.
But they might not all see the light of day. I need more time, but I am excited.
I read, I think it was in the New Yorker, that when I'm jumping back and forth in time here, so forgive me, but that when the Spanx website was first launched, that your mom she like had a luncheon party or something,
yes.
And she accidentally, because of the name, directed people at the luncheon party to a completely different kind of website. Is that true?
Totally true. My poor sweet mom. She sent all of her friends at the luncheon to the wrong website, Spanx. So if you want to go to Spanx.com, I highly recommend you spell it with an X or you're going to get a real treat. Like my mom and all her sweet friends. She called me up. She's like, Sarah, all my friends are commenting about your new business. I'm like, Mom, how did you spell it?
It's the one with the X, everybody.
Yes.
Don't forget.
But you know what? I just joined social media. I have not been on any social media. I joined Instagram 6 weeks ago, Meghna. And listen, that was a fear of mine too, believe it or not.
So one thing which I always ask, can you tell me the story of a time where something didn't quite go right, an idea or a project failed, and you didn't anticipate that failure, and what was it, and how did you deal with it?
Well, the first thing comes up, and that was a little bit earlier in my journey, which was I'm a terrible test taker, and I wanted to be a lawyer, and I failed the LSAT.
I feel your pain.
Are you a bad test taker?
Well, I failed the LSAT.
I mean,
I didn't go on to found a billion-dollar company,
it's
though.
It's so hard, the LSAT. I don't know. I debated all through high school, all through college. Like, my major was legal communications. That was my path. And I took the LSAT and basically failed it, took the course, took it again, and failed it again, basically. I mean, my score was so low, I had to, like, it was barely on the page. And so that was really a disruptive moment for me and my path, but life had other plans for me. And I often like to talk about how if you think you're failing at something, it's usually life's way of nudging you and just letting you know you're a little off course. And when I was growing up, my dad used to encourage me to fail. And I would sit at the dinner table and he would ask my brother and me what we had failed at that week.
Huh.
And if we didn't have something to tell him, he would be disappointed. And I can remember coming home and saying, Dad, I tried out for this and I was horrible. And he'd go, way to go, and high five me. And what he was doing was reframing my definition of failure. So failure for me and my brother now is simply not trying versus the outcome.
That's fantastic.
So that was a big gift my dad gave me growing up.
Well, Sarah Blakely, founder and CEO of Spanx, thank you so much for coming
in. Thank you so much, Magna. I'm glad we both failed the LSAT.
We spoke with Sarah Blakely yesterday. She was in town for the Massachusetts Conference for Women. And by the way, in honor of Sarah Blakely's father, Radio Boston listeners, I'm curious, what have you failed at this week? Tweet us at Radio Boston. And with that thought, have a terrific weekend. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.